You're listening to the Better for America podcast, presented by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens.
Hello, everyone. I'm Rebecca Weber, and this is your AMAC podcast, Better for America. It is an exciting day today as we have with us someone in the thick of the political process, a bit of a modern seer, someone who has successfully predicated the future with his polling and who, rather remarkably, predicted President Trump's 2016 win when almost no one else did. Please welcome the highly respected Trafalgar Group leader, a remarkable strategist and pollster, Robert Cahaly. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's an honor to be here today.
Wonderful. I just want to share a little background here. At age 10, sir, you began working in politics, campaigning door to door for a local race. And three decades later, you're working on getting to the truth in 2020 in 22 states and at all levels of politics. So I'm truly pleased to introduce you today and have you with us. Robert, too many of us here listening to our members, modern polling is a bit of a mystery. It's like trying to pull a rabbit out of a hat or predict the future with imperfect information. But yet you and your group, the Trafalgar Group, seem to have the secret sauce, I like to call it, the ability to find truth or predict likely outcomes when others fail, and they do often fail. So maybe without giving away your trade secrets, you could help educate us. Let AMAC members see how you do what you do and why you seem to be able to get done the things that you do with accurate outcomes when so many others miss the mark. How do you do it? And what is your method that has been so regularly successful?
Well, we do have some trade secrets that we aren't going to share. But, you know, most of it is what I consider to be pretty obvious. We live in a different day and age. Most of the polling system that is used today is based on a very old model that basically relative to when the phone was invented. So the idea that people are sitting at home with nothing to do, that phone's going to ring and they're going to have time to take a 20, 30, 40, 50 or more question survey, I guess that worked at some point. But it really, you know, the first fundamental problem is they ask too many darn questions. People do not have time. And so what happens when you ask so many questions, they'll tell you all their science and how all this is all, well, this is our system and this is what works. Well, the problem is your system doesn't work when you leave out a big swath of the population. And what you end up having when you ask that many questions is you end up having people who are on the extreme of either side, left or right, who really want to share what they believe. You end up with people who are bored. The problem is in this day and age, the average person doesn't have time. The average person doesn't pay attention to politics all the time. They don't watch Fox, CNN, or anything. They're raising kids, they're going to work, they're, you know, maybe watching some primetime entertainment TV. They've got other things going on in their life. And so when you call them with a long survey, they don't have time for it. So the first thing is we ask short questionnaires. My ideal questionnaire is about 5 questions. The longest I like to ask is around 9. I want you to be able to take one of our polls and be finished in under 3 minutes, if at all possible. The second is we hit people in a way that they can respond. You know, that we've seen people get settled in, well, all they do is live call. Well, that's great. But do you know any young people who answer the phone? You know, so what you have to do is you have to give people different ways to participate. So we do everything from live callers to automated calls to text. And I'll tell you, we love text because text get young people and get incredible participation out of people who are transient, who don't, you know, don't really have a home line. They move from time to time. And that number is kind of their only way they stay in touch with people. We find that we get a great participation. We also use emails and we use some other collection methods that we don't always share. But we use at least 5 mixed. Our goal is in every poll. And we make sure we get to the people we need to get to. And we don't start with, we have to hit this many people on email and this many people on text. No, I start with a demographic and geographic idea of what I need. And I'm going to fill in those gaps with whatever method works. You know, sometimes We were in the middle of a race in the primary this year in Virginia, and frankly, it was all live calls because people had been texted and emailed and called to death. And so we had to really rely on live calls. We did some in Louisiana, but we had to do most of them text because we were dealing with districts where people just didn't have home lines. So we based what we use to contact on what it takes to get the proper sample, because getting the proper sample is also essential. What a lot of these modern groups are doing is they're oversampling certain groups, tremendously undersampling other groups, and then they're using what's called weighting, where if they needed to get 30% African American and they only got 12, they'll just say, well, we're going to weight the 12 up to 30. Well, that gives, you know, that is taking what 12% said and giving them the weight of 30, and too much weighting, I think, skews your polling. And so we like to get it right the first time and not use so much weighting. The other thing is we like to ask questions that give people a way to tell us the truth. Well, maybe the answering the question straight on is not the way to do it. I learned something from an old pollster in South Carolina. His name was Rod Sheely, and he was a contemporary of Lee Atwater. And and I grew up in South Carolina doing politics. And what he used to say is you need to give people a comfortable way to tell you something uncomfortable, tell you something unpleasant. And so we have other questions that help do that. And, you know, in 2016, we asked, who do you think the majority of your neighbors are for? And then we saw all of the other polling companies start to use that question after we brought it to the forefront again in 2016. It had been used before, and it was part of overcoming what's called the social desirability bias, which is the tendency of people to give an answer that they think will, you know, put them in the best light to the person asking the question. And so this is a tactic been used before. It kind of gone out of fashion as people deny social desirability exists, but those people don't make any sense. After 2016, they were convinced, oh, we didn't wait enough for education. Oh, we're going to fix it. We had their little meetings and all that stuff, and they're going to solve the problem. Well, 2018 was their dress rehearsal, and guess what? We're the only company in the country that saw DeSantis was going to win. These guys made the same mistake. You had social desirability with DeSantis, Gillum. They all got it wrong again. So they didn't learn anything. Their weighting based on education didn't work, and that's why they ran into the same problem in 2020. In 2020, we had the lowest average error per state of anybody. We did, I believe, at seven battleground states, we had the best poll. And they keep making the same mistakes. And, you know, you got to wonder at some point, is it really about them making mistakes, or are they having such an agenda? I mean, is the poll designed to reflect the electorate, or is the poll designed to affect the electorate? And it's a fair question.
That is a very good question. You know, people do tend to like to follow the herd, if you will, right? You know, and feel more comfortable sort of looking to your right and to your left to see what other people are doing. And so you wonder if there is some sort of psychological manipulation in the way in which some of these poll numbers are presented to the American public. I want to ask you about the 2020 election, because it was such a jarring event. Without getting into any real detail there, I do want to look forward. I mean, the outcome in 2020, I thought for sure that it was going to go for President Trump, and then suddenly not so. I think many Americans, many of our AMAC members, felt that the irregularities were so profound, from the massive use of mail-in ballots to ballot harvesting, that frankly, it shakes confidence in America's electoral system. And I think many fear that if states don't protect themselves against fraud, that we could find 2022 twisted by events and influences that we just can't control. So as we're watching this cascading set of bad decisions from the administration, whether you're talking about border, the border crisis, crime, defunding the police, the economy, inflation, excess spending, so many socialist priorities. We see what's happening in China and now Afghanistan. We're looking to 2024. So I want to ask you, what can you share with us, if anything, about what you're seeing and what your polling suggests about where we are now, where we may be in 2022, and what may lie in store for us in 2024?
Well, obviously, there are a lot of people concerned about the integrity of the election. There are certainly a lot of things that happened in 2020 that I cannot explained statistically that don't make any sense. But right now, our focus has got to be on the things that what people can really agree on to help us answer some of these questions. Because I think regardless which side you're on, if you're on the side that from the extreme side that Biden won and there was nothing that happened that was the least bit fishy, and to the other side that thinks that Trump won and it was completely fishy, if you're anywhere in that spectrum, what we can agree on is that, one, we want to have fair elections. Two, if the election result had been known election night, if when it was all said and done, the other states, as Florida and Texas and North Carolina did, were able to count all their absentee ballots and give an actual number that ended up being the number they stuck with the next 4 or 5 days, everyone would feel better about that election. It's that creeping sense that something's changing that makes people uncomfortable. And frankly, if anybody's unhappy with the election, certainly if a majority of people are unhappy with it, we have to address those problems, because confidence in election goes directly to confidence in government. And a lot of what happens, you know, is based on the consent of the governed to be, to participate in society. And so that cannot be eroded. And you can, you know, people can blame that to the politician, but, you know, frankly, when things are so different and it looks like the election changes overnight, that's where the confidence was eroded. So if there was one thing that could be changed, I would love to see that. Just everybody pass a law that says the absentee ballot deadline is, a week out, and it's got to be in, and they're counted election night. I think that would instill a lot more confidence. The one thing I think people could also agree on is that if we had run it by the 2016 rules, the outcome would have probably been different. Now, some say that the 2020 rules were more fair and more inclusive. And those are arguments that can be had. But this system was new in a lot of places. And it sometimes, you know, it's not what happened in 2020. It's not like, so I don't look at it as some master plan for fraud. I look at it more like if you came into a bank and you told the employees to leave and you left the doors unlocked and you turned off the cameras and you opened the vault and you said, now, hey, nobody should steal anything. What's going to happen?
Right.
People that are going to do bad things are going to do bad things when you make it easy. And people that have integrity are going to do good things even when bad things are easy. So we need to look at the system that was way too much on the honor system. But looking forward, I see certain issues kind of trending. First thing we find is people are really tuned out. We see it every day. People say, well, you know, I hear from the left and the right, I can't watch the news. It just makes my life worse to watch the news every night. I don't watch cable TV. I hate it. It bothers me too much.
Yeah.
So every story, you know, we deal with these people all the time, especially in politics, the Beltway crowd that thinks everybody's tuned into everything. Well, they're not. So only certain stories are cutting through and getting past to average people. And the stories that we see getting past the average people are the border. They see the images from the border, whether they see them on the news, whether their friends share them on Facebook, whether they see them on TikTok. They're seeing those issues. They're seeing those videos. They realize there's a problem there and that there's a fence that people are going around that wasn't finished and was stopped being built. They know that Russia got a pipeline and America didn't, and they know that they're paying too much for gas and they don't like it. They know they're paying too much for a lot of things because of what the government spends, and they don't like it. On the other hand, they're people who have money in their pocket that came from the government, and make no mistake, they do like that. Mm-hmm. We saw that in Georgia. The promise of another $1,400 was enough to swing the election. Biden was in town and with Ossoff and with Warnock, saying if these guys win, you get Schumer and you get your $1,400. There's numerous articles about it. So when people tell me what happened in Georgia, I say, no, I was there. I know what happened. And you're reading it wrong. You can't give away people. You can't have stimulus money rolling in people's pockets for election and letting them think there's a difference in how much they get by who they vote for. Nancy Pelosi believed that, or she wouldn't have stopped the stimulus money before the fall election. So they know it's true. Some Republicans don't believe it, but the Democrats know it's true. The other thing I see is people getting frustrated at the way America looks on the world stage. What's happened in Afghanistan, you know, just like the images of the towers falling and people, you know, jumping off and all that affected one generation. The next generation, remember those people falling off those planes, those people running behind those planes. No one can even relate to being so afraid of a government that you would do that. So it, people in people's minds, that says something, that somebody would risk that versus stay somewhere. You know, we talk about people coming across the border for a better life, but this is a different perspective. And now people who grew up post 9/11 really didn't understand what the Taliban was, what was going on. And they're hearing about the treatment of women and the harshness they deal with people. You know, they kind of forgot. Now, our attention span is really short. And so this is reminding people of a lot. And seeing America letting another country tell us when we have to do something, you know, there's an American ego that can't really handle that. And knowing that it's just unexplainable restraint and not our inability. You know, I mean, if somebody 10 times as strong as you says, hey, you know, you're not going to this room or I'm going to punch you, then, well, you pretty much have to listen to what he said. But if you're the big strapping guy and the little guy's telling you don't come in here, your restraint is hard to explain. And so people don't understand that. And they're beginning to understand that it makes America look weak. And they don't like feeling weak. People like the idea of America being strong and it being the remaining superpower. And this looking like this is making them very concerned. And we see an overall concern about China. People are a lot more concerned about China than I think somebody in Hollywood and somebody in corporate America know. People would just as soon not buy anything from them. They're very concerned about it. And it's one of those things where these two things together are making them very nervous. And last, the reaction to COVID. I mean, again, it goes back to the confidence in the government. People see what they see as overreaction to it. People are seeing tactics that they don't like. You know, I mean, a lot of Republicans I know said, hey, I took, you know, they will say, I'm taking the vaccine because Trump fought it to get it for us and I should. And, you know, and people are blaming, you know, the Republicans aren't taking the vaccine. Well, the president says take the vaccine. Most of the hosts on TV say take the vaccine. So, you know, a lot of this movement is being blamed on the right, and I don't think that's necessarily fair.
Very interesting. Robert, you've helped everyone from AMAC members to Fox News understand what is or may be happening inside the Biden administration. I'm curious, who is viewed as being in charge? What do people think that this White House is doing? To many of us, it looks like a train wreck, a national policy that's so far off course that it has left the track. We're seeing wasting tax dollars on crazy programs that no one really wants. It's getting worse by the day. I was wondering if you could maybe talk through one or two recent polls and their findings to help us understand what you're seeing sort of ahead of the curve, if you will.
Well, we have one I think you're referencing. We had 57% of people don't think Joe Biden's actually in charge, which was why we've seen on our polling, we see about a 7 or 8 point margin of Biden being more popular than his policies. But now that personal popularity is starting to catch up with him because he flat out took credit for Afghanistan. And, you know, even though he ended up blaming a lot of people in his speech, he started by saying, it's my fault, it's my policy. But what you're seeing is there's kind of a divide. We have some people who say, hey, you know, it's Pelosi and AOC and the other ones calling the shot. And then we have people who say it's kind of the deep involved people in deep state type that have been around a long time. I hear, what's her name? Ms. Rice, Susan Rice's name brought up a lot as somebody who is a puppet master. And obviously, I mean, she's a very intelligent individual and there's no reason she couldn't be if that's the role was extended to her. You know, some think it's Kamala Harris. So it's a mix of who they think is behind them. And some think it's, you know, it's big tech, and it's a combination of big tech and, you know, that he's compromised with Chinese. I mean, I don't know exactly in any individual one that they think it is, but it seems like there in their mind, there's an oligarchy out there somewhere that's calling the shots. But what we're seeing now is this, it's almost like the mainstream media has decided we have to move on. We saw an initial, what appeared to be kind of a, well, their plan was to have him and put somebody else in there as the, you know, put Kamala in there down the road. And then she was so unpopular, they kind of abandoned that plan. And then they see this, and the evidence, you know, a lot of people are telling us that they think that they're moving up the timetable, that they're going to go ahead and put, there's going to be, you know, some kind of a statement he's going to make that he's not feeling right. Or I don't know that it'll go as far as the 25th Amendment. I think that would be hard for the country. And I think they know that, but, you know, just like I think the Rasmussen poll showed also that, people didn't think he'd serve out the 4 years. I think that is less likely today than it was 2 weeks ago. And it had been on the way up, frankly, because of how unpopular Harris was. But I think there's a consensus now that they want to, the people that are, you know, the party bosses and that side want to go ahead and give her a shot, because they really don't think things could get worse. And they feel like she might be able to turn things around.
Interesting. So do you think that the 2022 midterms are as promising as they look in the context of, you know, because of all that's going on, the taxes, spending, bad foreign policy actions being pushed by Democrats? What does your crystal ball tell us about 2022?
My crystal ball, if I had one, would say the 22 elections look very good, but let me warn you of the storm on the horizon. And the storm on the horizon is, we could have variants of COVID that come back, and this continues, and the Republicans look like they've gone out too far and not take the virus seriously. And the second thing that worries me a lot more than even that is passing something that puts checks in a lot of voters' hands and can sway their votes. Because here's the thing, Donald Trump has clearly transformed the Republican Party into a working people's party. Don't ever make working people choose between money in their pocket and voting for your candidate.
Thank you for that. Interesting perspective. Thinking forward again, what do you think currently are some of the, I guess, the biggest issues that are coming? Maybe that's one of them you just mentioned, that that's certainly something that could we could see unfold. But what do you think AMAC members can do to help assure that we don't lose our key freedoms?
Well, you know, one of the first things to do is stay in touch with your members of Congress, especially when they're home. When there's events, go to them. Make your voices heard, because, you know, there's, I mean, frankly, it didn't even like you can walk into the Congress anymore and try to catch them in the halls. I mean, it's kind of locked down there. It reminds me of one of those little places they hid in Walking Dead. They actually got it protected very well from the regular voting zombies. But the fact is, when they're home, share your thoughts. You'll run. Good congressmen, good senators go to the same grocery store you do. You will run into them at dinner. You will run into them at the dry cleaners. Instead of just saying hi, don't be hesitant. Share your thoughts. Though it might seem anecdotal to you, trust me, I've been in politics a long time, and politicians will really doubt something scientific if they have heard from a lot of people they know that express a different view. So give them your view. Don't just say hi, be polite. Be polite. They'll listen to you a lot more if you're polite. But tell them how you feel and how strong you feel about issues. That's the number one thing you can do. And frankly, it's more effective than, you know, emails and stuff like that, because those don't, those just kind of go in and get dealt with by staff, and staff can choose to share what they want to share.
Very good point. And we're doing so much here at AMAC. People can find out who their elected representatives are simply by going to our tools and resources button on our website. And there we do give you some good information, but really, really smart to do this on a very grassroots level. And I encourage that. We encourage that here at AMAC as well. I need to ask you a final question here. The past few weeks, there has been significant unrest in the Middle East. We're talking Afghanistan, and it breaks my heart to see what President Biden has allowed over there. It's even more devastating to those who fought against the Taliban and those who died on 9/11. You recently had your team survey the crisis in Afghanistan, and you posed the question, what best describes how you feel about how President Biden is handling U.S. military operations in Afghanistan? And I personally disagree with his handling of this major crisis. Could you tell the AMAC members, our AMAC members, your thoughts on the current situation, the outcome of that particular poll?
Yeah, I mean, that poll was finished up Sunday when this had just started. And even then, it was, you know, I think 69.4, something like that, 70% who were unhappy, who strongly disapproved or disapproved. And the ones who approved of it, every president, you know, Trump used to talk about the if he shot some Fifth Avenue crowd that would stand with him. Biden has that crowd, too. There's a crowd that is going to back the president no matter what they do. Among those who are in the, you know, the 30% who were supportive, there are also people who just want out of Afghanistan. They don't care who we leave. They don't care who dies. They just want us out. But most of those people that held that position were people who just like Biden, they don't want to think they didn't vote for the right candidate, and they're going to stand with him. I would tell you, if we redid those numbers today, it would be a little worse, because things have gotten worse, not better. And you know, that was before the Taliban was issuing deadlines that we were respecting. That was before a lot of the images had even made it out. That was just people knowing. That was pretty much the fog of they took over the country in a week and a half. You know, that's what that poll represents. So I think that's gotten worse. And it is really his contradictory statements, I think, also have contributed to this, because people hear him saying things and then hear his own State Department, his own generals basically counteracting what he just said. And so that's why there's the hesitance. And the other thing it's doing is on the issue of COVID, when he wants to pivot and talk about COVID instead of this all the time, it's starting to put in people's minds, maybe COVID and focusing on it is a little bit of a distraction. I mean, it's one of those things where even if you didn't see that before, the way you see that in the middle of this crisis, he goes back to COVID, then people are starting to realize, well, maybe there's something to this. And most people that we talk to just are of the mind, hey, this is America. This country is based on self-governance. Give us the information. Let us make good decisions and trust us to make them. And that's the way they feel about it. And that's the way they feel about COVID. So they don't, you know, they are going to make the calculated risk and take the precautions they think are best for them and their family. And that's where most people are. And so that's why pushing more and more kind of draconian rules is meeting with such resistance. It doesn't mean they don't take COVID seriously. It means that they're taking the responsibility in their own hands and they don't want to be told.
Yes. Yeah. Facts are stubborn things. And I think that when people attempt to sort of rationalize away why they voted for Biden, you know, maybe a little cognitive dissonance in play there, that becomes more and more difficult when, as you said, you begin to see patterns repeat themselves where Biden might dodge a question over and over again and suddenly talk about things that, you know, people are smart and people have good intuition. And I think average Americans are recognizing that there are a lot of things that they didn't vote for that are happening, that they're watching unfold. This has been wonderful. I want to thank you so much. It's just a pleasure to have you with us, Robert. You have given us so much to think about, as you always do. And I really do hope to see you again soon. I want to thank you for what you do for America, for your patriotism, and for your conviction. And I want to thank our AMAC members for tuning in today. If you haven't downloaded the AMAC News app, you can watch, you can listen to this podcast, track breaking news. Just hit the subscribe button, follow, like, and share wherever you are on social media. But that news app is fabulous. It's great, it's free, it's easy, and it's breaking news. So just reminding everybody to do that. Robert, thanks again for being with me today.
It was an honor to be on the show, and look forward to staying in touch with you.
Very well. And to all of you out there listening today, until next time, I'm Rebecca Weber. This is your AMAC podcast, Better for America. Thank you for being here. God bless you. And we'll see you next time. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Better for America podcast. To learn more about AMAC and all it has to offer, visit us at www.amac.us.